As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and I'm a journalist. Join me on my new podcast, But We Loved, coming May 15th, where queer elders recount the amazing history they've lived through.
In the middle of Wall Street, they stopped traffic. They were doing a die-in.
And in the process, share little gems of wisdom for the next generation.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
You can listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And today we're talking about monsters. We're talking about Godzilla, also known as Gojira. And we're talking about King Kong. And we're maybe going to, well, you know, we are going to talk a little bit about Barbie.
Because she's a monster.
Because she's a monster. And most importantly, we're talking about the science of all this. But before we really dive into it, what is your experience with giant monsters?
Well, you know, I have a three-year-old.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
So Barney is the first thing I think of.
Oh, I thought you were going to say she was like a small monster.
Oh, well, yeah, she kind of, yeah. And it is kind of funny how, actually, I'm sure to her I'm a big monster, and she actually loves for my husband and I to chase her around and sort of do the big monster arms. So, yeah, for sure there are some themes going on there.
But Barney is favored.
Barney, I think of as a monster. I think of the Kraken, of course. One of my favorite monsters.
Oh, from Clash of the Titans.
Yes, yeah.
Paul Bunyan. Yeah. Paul Bunyan? Was there a movie about Paul Bunyan? Or just in general, this
story? Just Paul Bunyan, like super giant.
How come?
Kind of a human, but not.
How come no one ever did... I mean, that would have been great to have, like, a purely American... I mean, I guess King Kong is really our American giant monster. But even he's an import. Paul Bunyan. Paul Bunyan and his giant ox attacking, like, San Francisco. Like, that would be a great flick.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't think that people think of Paul Bunyan as menacing, but I do. I think that there's a plot line here. What about you?
I mean, I grew up as a young boy, so I was very into the monster films, especially the one I've mentioned... I think it was like on TBS or something. They had the Grandpa Munster hosted a midday monster show, and they were always showing like Godzilla movies, and you know, of course there are just tons of Godzilla movies. So it's Godzilla versus this versus that versus like a whole cadre of various rubber suited villains. So you know, I was heavy into those, and I was and am a big Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan, and a lot of the movies that they watched would involve giant rubber monster suits.
Yeah.
And one of my favorites today, which I won't get break into too much, but is a film called Hanuman versus Seven Ultraman, and it's an Ultraman film, but it's a Thai Japanese co-production in which Hanuman, the monkey god out of Hindu mythology, but also very important in Thai culture, Hanuman teams up with the Ultraman and an Ultra Woman. I'm not really sure on the. I'm more up on the Hindu mythology than the Ultraman mythology. But they team up to just beat the tar out of a bunch of hideous monsters that emerge from like a rocket manufacturing plant or something. So it's goofy and beautiful and psychedelic and from like
the '60s
or '70s, and it's well worth hunting down if you too are a monster fan. But I guess one of the things that I'm really highlighting here is like silliness. Like there's definitely a large amount of silliness and fun. Like kids love Gamera, kids love Godzilla. But if you go all the way back to 1954, Gojira. Mm-hmm. You're really looking at a different animal, especially if you're not dealing with the Americanized version that came out.
Right.
Had like Raymond Burr in it and all, and they, you know, a different translation. But the original Grimm Gojira movie is a different animal entirely.
Right, because, I mean, this is a far more complex creature, right? Mm-hmm. The American version is not so much concerned about the radiation part, right?
Right.
Right. But the Japanese version, this is a creature born of radiation and exuding radiation.
Right. I mean, the whole sort of part of the mythology of an atomic test, and it brings this monster into being. But yeah, in this original one, like, people were dying just from being near Godzilla.
And, right, exposed to it.
Right, and there are far more scenes of individuals fleeing. It's more of a disaster film than a lot of the subsequent Godzilla films.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people fleeing, lots of people in camps, lots of people in hospitals, and lots of people dying from radiation poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally, it's such an interesting film because you look at Japan's place in the world at the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're in the shadows of the Second World War, in the shadows of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. In other incidents, Gojira references an incident involving an American thermonuclear device tested near Bikini Atoll.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the Pacific, codenamed Bravo, was detonated with about 2.5 times greater force than anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And the fallout from the bomb, it ended up enveloping this tuna trawler,
mm-hmm.
Named the Lucky Dragon Number 5, and is just coated in like a blizzard of radioactive ash. And so the crew members then return to their home port. They're blackened. They have blistered skin, just acute radiation sickness, and of course, and all the tuna is irradiated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was reading some interesting commentary on this, which I'll link to on the blog so that people can explore it further. But there's a lot of interesting commentary on how, like, this incident in particular, especially on the heels of the Second World War, I mean, the Japanese culture is very concerned with hygiene, and then you have this situation where, you know, we're just radioactively contaminated and not sure what is clean anymore. And then there's also commentary to make about, especially in subsequent Godzilla films, you see Japan using all of its technological prowess to fight off an opposing force.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be argued that post-war Japan felt rather powerless to a certain degree,
mm-hmm.
in the global climate, you know, because they've just come off this disastrous armed conflict. And so their fantasy world, their fictional worlds, kind of reflect this longing to be able to deal with problems more directly. I mean, not to limit the films to just that. It's not just a 1+1=2 situation, but those themes are pretty strong in the film series.
Well, I was going to say, you see that anxiety working itself out quite a bit in these films. There are 28 Godzilla films.
And now, is that counting the Geno movie?
I believe that is, and I know that has been called an abomination.
Yeah, and not in a good way. Like,
is this the one where the version of Godzilla is that he's a lizard whose DNA gets messed with because of a nuclear meltdown and
mm-hmm.
scatters it and becomes a monster, which is kind of, I mean, I know that, you know, Godzilla is far-fetched anyway, but, I mean, you couldn't make it any more far-fetched with that premise, right?
Right.
But, yeah, 28 films. And from what I understand, too, Godzilla, you know, at first is a very menacing figure,
mm-hmm.
right, is the embodiment of the problems of nuclear energy,
mm-hmm.
nuclear warfare. And then he comes to later on represent somewhat of a hero, or at least take on this part of as someone who is helping the people. And in fact, they have different versions of Godzilla versus this, Godzilla versus that, Godzilla versus the smog monster.
Yeah, so 1970s. Fighting ecological problems.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, especially in the famous King Kong versus Godzilla, which is, you know, inter-promotional dream match there.
Right.
This is really on a slightly removed scale. This is U.S. versus Japan again.
Yep.
And each country's cut has a slightly different preference in who's the superior super monster. But then in later films, Godzilla becomes not only a champion of Japan, but a champion of Earth itself, defending Earth against various catastrophes. And
mm-hmm.
And then Godzilla's kin do the same. Like, Gamera is always protecting the planet, protecting children, which I think is kind of beautiful. You know, it's kind of the idea that these we create, especially in the original Godzilla, Gojira, we create this avatar of all the worst possibilities of humanity.
Yeah.
This frightening thing, and then we're able to transform it into something positive, into like a strength. I don't know. I guess you could make the argument too that it's kind of casting the warnings aside and forgetting what made it potent to begin with, but.
Yeah, but again, I think it's so, this is where, you know, art, movies, paintings, everything that sort of allows us to work out these anxieties comes into play. And in fact, NPR had a story this morning that was talking about Fukushima a year later, you know, the earthquake, the tsunami, and then the subsequent, you know, meltdown of the three reactors, and that, you know, the real problem right now, a year later, isn't so much the radiation levels, which really aren't as bad as they initially thought, because much of them were swept away by the winds out over the Pacific, but more that it's a psychological problem, because, again, you have this long history with nuclear materials, Japan, and this distrust. And a year later, people are still not quite sure if they feel, you know, like they're on terra firma. Just, you know, with their government, with their food supplies.
Right.
And it's just, it's kind of interesting. So they were saying that that is not a culture that really invests a lot into mental health. I mean, they have, you know, obviously you can go and you can get medical attention, but it's not so much geared toward mental health. So there's not so much an outlet there.
King Kong, on the other hand, there's not. I don't know. He's not quite as deep.
No. I mean, this is what the 1933 that King Kong comes on the scene. And people have pointed to King Kong and said that, you know, definitely King Kong embodies sort of the naivete of American society, and especially concerning race relations at that time. But yeah, King Kong.
Because he's this foreign threat, this subhuman threat, and you can sort of
comes from an exotic place.
Exotic place. He wants to steal women and climb buildings.
Right.
And
yeah.
I guess if you look at King Kong from that standpoint, he's kind of awful. Like, he's also kind of an avatar of awfulness. Just maybe in his initial inception, they weren't as conscious of it. Whereas Gojira is obviously, the themes are a lot more prevalent and on the surface. Whereas King Kong, the awfulness is kind of hidden.
And yet in King Kong, in the story, you're meant to feel empathy for this creature, right?
Right.
So you're to fear him, but you also are to empathize with him, right? Because here he is, he's the last survivor of species, he's lived on Skull Island his entire life, he's a beautiful girl, you know, he tries to make out with her or whatever. And then he is essentially enslaved, brought to New York, and made to perform on Broadway.
I know. I always forget about that portion of the story, and then of course the whole building thing and the airplane.
Yeah. It's a sad story.
The remake of that was a lot more in keeping with, I guess, the spirit of the original.
Is that the Jessica Lange one?
Oh, there were a couple of remakes. That's right. There's one that there was like a '80s version of it.
Yeah,
and that one was. I think that one was just kind of weird. I don't know if anyone has any real love for that film outside of maybe a cheesy enthusiasm. But then Peter Jackson did.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
Which my only problems with that one is, A, it seemed, I think that movie's like 6 hours long or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's awfully long for King Kong. And also, I remember it just had some really, like, I love dark imagery as much as the next person. But, like, this is King Kong, and there's this scene where these, like, all these horrible giant insect monsters are, like, eating people, and giant slugs are, like, sucking people's faces off.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, this is a bit dark, Jackson.
Well, it was filler, to your point. I mean, you can't really make a film that long with the premise of King Kong, you know?
Yeah, but still, it was over long. Like, everything was, they're like, King Kong, let's do this, except it's going to be King Kong on steroids. In the original, he fights one dinosaur. This time, he's going to fight two dinosaurs. You know?
That's right.
So.
All right, so let's throw some science on these beasts.
Yeah, first let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll cease babbling about the culture behind these monsters and so forth. And we'll start talking about the science behind gigantic animals and whether it's even possible.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now, it is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return. your time won't. And we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, fam. I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, a daily podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Every weekday, we bring you conversations with the culture makers who inspire us.
Like our recent episode with Hollywood royalty Regina and Raina King. We talked about the creative power of women's relationships.
I feel like, thank God for women, like, especially when it comes to Black women. The way we lean on our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, our friends. We're just each other's pulse. I mean, it's molecular, you know?
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But We Loved is a new podcast about queer history coming May 15th. I'm Jordan Gonsalves, your host. Growing up, I thought being gay was the worst thing I could ever be. The gay history I learned was tragic.
Jerry had died of AIDS, and it's like, what is happening?
It was survival. That's why it's called survival sex.
But as I interviewed queer elders, I realized there was another history that I had never been taught. A history of courage and perseverance.
I wanted to take control of my story and not be ashamed of it.
And it was a history full of love.
The joy we found in saying husband again and again and again was incredible.
And while learning this new queer history from my elders, I realized they had so much wisdom to pass down.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
From iHeart Podcasts, I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and this is But We Loved. Listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we're back, and it's time to get into the morphological limits of giant monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so here's just something that's a basic, okay?
Okay.
All right. So if you're going to create something that's bigger than the original, the weight as a function of their volume is going to increase dramatically faster than does the surface area of this creature. This is important to remember because this has a lot of important consequences. So basically, it's that if you are going to double something's size and keep its proportions the same, the weight doesn't double or even quadruple. It actually increases by a factor of 8.
Okay.
Okay, so when we were talking about King Kong, we're talking about a gorilla that is super giant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we're talking about Godzilla, we are talking about a dinosaur hybrid.
Yeah.
That is gigantic.
It runs on both gas and electric.
That's right.
He does have some electric properties, seemingly.
Which doesn't make any sense with the flames and the radioactivity. I mean, there's a lot going on there, but anyway.
Well, radioactive firestorms. I mean, that's part of the whole nuclear apocalypse scenario.
I know, but like you see the ridges on his back start to get electrified, and then the fire comes out of his mouth, and yet at the same time, he's always exuding radiation. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's a lot of port for one fork.
Yeah, well, Gamera has it coming out both ends. So,
well, yeah.
Because you've seen Gamera, right? The big turtle? He can retract his back two legs, and then fire comes out, and he flies around. But
I was going to make like a little gas joke there. The 8-year-old boy in me.
Yeah. I should have brought in my Gamera toy to help us with this. But I'm getting off track gadding about monsters. Another way to look at this mask thing that I really like is the spherical cow analogy. All right, so the shape of an animal can be a little complex, and it's simpler if you look at something like a cow and look at the cow and imagine it as just a sphere, like the mass mm-hmm. is reduced to a sphere of cowness, okay? And then imagine increasing the size of that that mass, all right? And again, the volume increases more rapidly than the surface area. So if you double the radius of the sphere, the surface area increases 4 times, and the volume increases 8 times. That, again, mm-hmm. like you said, you double something's size, and if it keeps the same proportions, the weight doesn't double or even quadruple, it increases 8-fold. So you have something like King Kong, right, who is 30 feet high in the film, mm-hmm. 5 times the size of a real gorilla, and his proportions are more or less the same.
Yeah.
If you were to take an actual gorilla and you were to blow it up like that, in a, you know, honey, I blew up the kid's fashion, the creature would not be able to stand. Its legs would break, basically.
Right, it would crush under its own weight. Its bones couldn't support it. We're talking about 30 feet high,
right.
About 25 tons, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was reading an interesting commentary about the size of animals and how the size of something is very much, I mean, it's not just a matter of, oh, this is a big one and this is a little one. Yes, there's certain amount to be said about dwarfism versus mm-hmm. gigantism in organisms, but take something like a whale. Like a whale is large, a whale is massive, and its mass allows it, among other things, to keep warm in chilling waters.
Right.
If you were to reduce a blue whale to the size of a minnow, it would not be able to stay warm. Its size is part of its function.
It would actually have to consume far more
right.
For energy, right?
Yeah, that's why you have things like mice and other small animals that are just so ravenous that have an endless hunger because they're having to keep up their metabolism.
Yep. Yeah. So when you're looking at King Kong and you're talking about a creature that's 125 times heavier than an original gorilla, mm-hmm. right? And you also have the problem that relative to the size, King Kong has only 25 times the surface area of an ape's skin.
Right.
Okay. And this is important because you, on top of that, you have fur that is 5 times as thick as a real gorilla.
Because he needs to lose excess heat. He's metabolizing mm-hmm. like other mammals to keep warm.
Right.
He's metabolizing. He needs to lose that excess heat, but he has less skin to lose it through and more fur that's insulating him.
Right. So it's a lot harder to wick off that heat, right?
Right.
So, I mean,
he would have to shave constantly. And then that still might not do it.
A hairless King Kong,
yeah.
Which would completely change that storyline, I think. But, I mean, just think about that. If he were to try to do any sort of normal movements, mm-hmm. you know, first of all, he would collapse again under the weight of himself. But also, he would probably collapse because he wouldn't be able to, again, get rid of the heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would just be in a jumbled mess. He wouldn't be able to get the girl and climb to the top of the Empire State Building.
Right. Another thing to note about the legs. Again, he would need larger leg bones.
Mm-hmm.
He would just need bigger legs in general. And he would probably need a different gait. You know, instead of having like
right.
ape-like bendy knees, he would need more of a straight-legged type of movement, which would probably limit his ability to climb skyscrapers.
Yeah, indeed. All right, let's talk about one husky boy here. Godzilla.
Godzilla. Well, Godzilla has a kind of a leg up on the situation on one hand because he's cold-blooded. I don't know. Presumably he is cold-blooded. And
in the American version?
Oh, well, who knows in the American
okay.
version? That doesn't count. Presumably Godzilla is cold-blooded, not
mm-hmm.
counting the nuclear fires brewing in his belly. And and we look back to the dinosaurs, and these are clearly a great example of a large creature that was probably cold-blooded, you know, the jury's kind of still out on some of that,
yeah.
but presumably cold-blooded for the sake of this argument, and was walking around on land. Some of these guys were quite huge, and while we used to think that some of these different sauropods were walking around in the muck or in the water to help, you know,
To buoy them up. But especially if they were to make love.
Right, right.
Or to propagate
their
species.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about that in the dinosaur
sex. I should say propagate their species. But yeah, if they were going to make out, knock boots, whatever,
mm-hmm.
there was always that question of how do they actually do this because
right.
they are so weighty. And in Godzilla's case, we are talking about 60,000 tons, right? Like
right.
the size of a battleship.
Yeah, and he does emerge from the ocean. That's worth noting.
Mm-hmm.
But back to battleship, that's another interesting example I ran across. If you took a battleship out of the water and put it on land,
mm-hmm.
like it would, to what extent would it fall apart because it doesn't have water holding it.
Right.
But okay, so the dinosaurs, for a while we have thought that they, that some of these larger models were having to stay in the water all the time to support their weight. A lot of the footprint information that we have now, the fossilized prints, indicate that they were walking around, at least in the mud, you know, and therefore were capable of land movement.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even running as fast as, say, an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like 3 miles per hour, I think. But here's the thing. In addition to having really thick legs, like a Kong or a Godzilla would need, they also walked around on four.
Right.
Which, is, again, is an enormous help. And Godzilla is walking around on two.
Well, especially if you're thinking about the heart and pumping blood,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's another key thing, because your brain needs some of that blood.
Yeah, and we've sauropods have been somewhat of a mystery in that respect too, right? Because mm-hmm. they have really long necks and they have huge bodies. And so you're talking about pumping blood from one end of a 200 meter long body to the other, and that's a lot of pressure. So if you're Godzilla, you know, in order to resist that kind of pressure, your arteries near your heart would have to be made out of steel, you know, and so that your heart didn't burst.
Yeah, like even giraffes, we've talked about about this, their hearts have to produce very high pressure to force the blood all the way to their brains. And way back, one of our first few podcasts together, we talked about exploding heads.
Yeah.
And remember, there was the some people were asking, well, how come the giraffe's head doesn't explode when it bends down to drink? There's actually, they have a cluster of arteries and veins that divert the blood flow under the right circumstances to equalize the blood pressure.
Yeah, they've got adaptations for that.
But the blood pressure involved in some of these dinosaurs, these long-necked sauropods, is like we're looking at like 8 times what we would encounter in a normal animal.
Right.
So something like Godzilla or King Kong, they would have to have tremendous blood pressure, like you said, to keep the brain active.
Right. Or maybe they just get dizzy every once in a while, and that's why they're swiveling around the cities and destroying everything.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned dizziness, because that's one way to get a quick idea of what we're talking about with the blood to the brain. Lay down for a few minutes and then get up really quick.
But not right now.
Not right now.
Because we don't know what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, you could be on a bus, on a train, walking.
But that feeling that you get when you get up really quick and you're like, ooh, I'm so dizzy, that's because your position has changed. The blood has to get to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you were even taller, it would be even more of an issue. So that's another thing to take into consideration with these giant animals is, how's the blood flow going to work? How are they going to get blood to their brain? You're dealing with a whole new set of engineering problems.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and last hour on the business. I understand now, it's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, a daily podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Every weekday, we bring you conversations with the culture makers who inspire us.
Like our recent episode with Hollywood royalty Regina and Raina King. We talked about the creative power of women's relationships.
I feel like, thank God for women, like, especially when it comes to Black women. The way we lean on our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, our friends, we're just each other's pulse. I mean, it's molecular, you know?
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage, for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on.
Mm.
Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But We Loved is a new podcast about queer history coming May 15th. I'm Jordan Gonsalves, your host. Growing up, I thought being gay was the worst thing I could ever be. The gay history I learned was tragic.
Jerry had died of AIDS, and it's like, what is happening?
It was survival. That's why it's called survival sex.
But as I interviewed queer elders, I realized there was another history that I had never been taught. A history of courage and perseverance.
I wanted to take control of my story and not be ashamed of it.
And it was a history full of love.
The joy we found in saying husband again and again and again was incredible.
And while learning this new queer history from my elders, I realized they had so much wisdom to pass down.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
From iHeart Podcasts, I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and this is But We Loved. Listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's another sticking point.
Okay.
Godzilla's skin.
Yes.
Okay. It has to be somehow strong enough to resist bullets, variety of munitions, but yet flexible enough to move around.
Ah.
Right. So, I mean, that's some serious engineering right there.
It is, yeah.
And nanotechnology wasn't even, you know, in existence in 1954.
And then another key issue to keep in mind with animal size is that you have to ask yourself, like, why are animals as big as they are, and why do they remain that way? Well, like, size evolution has a lot to do with the arms race between prey and predators and surviving various environments. Like, there has to be a reason for something to be that big. And granted, Godzilla kind of gets by with the whole, it's a mutation, or it's, you know, ancient animal from a previous ecosystem. Plus radiation equals something that doesn't quite make sense. King Kong has less of an excuse because he's just living on an island somewhere, right?
Right.
And does he really have an environment and ecosystem that supports his size? I mean, granted, there are like dinosaurs on Skull Island, and presumably he's eating some of those, right?
But yeah, but if he's the largest and most fierce too, I mean, he doesn't have a natural predator that he needs to be really that large and dominate anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when we're talking about super predators, especially this was us, wasn't it? Or I feel like we were talking about this in a past podcast about...
Could have been our doppelgangers.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Oh, their podcast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mind to blow.
Don't mention it.
Oh, yeah.
Don't.
Yeah. Okay. But if you think of like any kind of super predator, especially like these prehistoric super predators, like mm-hmm. these giant, like super sharks, super tyrannosaur type creatures, imagine them as kings atop a pyramid of bones. They're at the very top.
Yeah.
And that pyramid gets wider as you reach the ground, because those are all the layers of food that have to support them. Like the lowest layer, of course, is like plants. And then there are a whole bunch of things that eat those plants. And then things that eat those animals. And then things that eat those animals. And at the very top, you have this lofty king of all things. The environment can only support so many of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there are limits to what they can support.
What they can give.
Right, and what they can give. So that's another thing you have to ask about, especially like a King Kong or anything that lives on a monster island, is to what extent could the ecosystem possibly support an animal of this size?
And how long could it support it before, you know, King Kong wiped out everything?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. He's not very sustainable. That's the thing.
Yep.
So he's a perfect symbol for American culture.
I was about to say, yeah, he's a good symbol for gluttony, for sure.
But another symbol of American culture. Right? It's the same.
Oh, yeah. Another beast. What we're talking about is the blonde-haired giant menace, Barbie. Since 2007, Galia Slayen, now a student at Hamilton College, unveils a monster she created for the purpose of showing people the sort of body dysmorphia present in the Barbie doll. Mm-hmm. And she presents this at the National Eating Disorder Awareness Week at different events. It is a life-size Barbie that she created. And I'm just going to throw some stats out there. If Barbie were an actual woman, she would be 5'9".
That's a reasonable height for a lady.
Yeah, yeah. She would have a 39-inch bust. Now, okay, in these times of padding, mm-hmm. maybe that doesn't seem too huge, but just think about it. That really is quite large. Well, that's more like on par with maybe Dolly Parton.
Okay, okay, so Dolly Parton is a good frame of reference for that. Okay.
Yeah. An 18-inch waist, which is insane.
Like, who would that be on par with?
That would be Vivian Leigh from Gone with the Wind, and she was corseted to a 19-inch waist. And that's insane because she's super petite.
Okay, so we're talking petite woman corseted to the point of passing out.
Yeah, so think about, your typical hourglass dimensions would be, 34, 24, 34. Mm-hmm. 34 being the hips, 24 being the waist, 34 being the bust. Okay, so here we have Barbie, 5'9", 39 bust, 18-inch waist, and 33 hips. Okay, so very slender hips. And a size 3 shoe. Okay. Now, of course, with all the other Godzilla and King Kong proportions, that doesn't seem too crazy. But again, when we get the Godzilla dolls, or I should say toys, rather, mm-hmm. or King Kong toys, we don't actually think of them as fashioned after ourselves, whereas Barbie is fashioned after a female human. So at 5'9 tall and weighing 110 pounds, Barbie would have a body fat index of 16.24, and she likely would not menstruate because of this. And if she were a real woman, she would have to walk on all fours due to her proportions. And I just thought this was fascinating. Slumber Party Barbie was introduced in 1965 and came with a bathroom scale permanently set at 110 pounds with a book entitled How to Lose Weight with directions inside stating simply, don't eat.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the most monstrous thing we've discussed in the podcast.
Uh-huh. And there are 2 Barbie dolls sold every second in the world.
Wow.
Now that is world domination, my friend.
Yeah, I far better that a little girl or a little boy would want to grow up and be Godzilla, I think.
I mean, you can breathe fire. That's pretty cool.
You're turning your weaknesses into strengths. Mm-hmm. You're standing up for the environment, for nation, for planet, for little kids. I mean, all that.
Yeah.
Barbie just wants to lose weight and not learn math. So.
Yeah, yeah. But, just a little fun, talk about the limits of human, proportions.
Here's something I want to throw out to the listeners. I wonder, has any work of fiction actually tackled giant creatures in a more believable manner, like taking into account the physics? Because that's off the table with these. And I'm not complaining because I enjoy them, but the only example I can think of offhand is that there's a book by the author Michael Shea, who's a fabulous sci-fi, horror, and dark fantasy writer, and he wrote these books about this character Niff the Lean, and he's always going on these, the guy is super into Dante's Inferno and the sex lives of insects, so he's definitely an author after my own heart. He writes these tales about these characters going into the underworld, and there's one episode where a guy has to bring back this elixir that these giant underworld insects use to feed their larvae, and he brings mm-hmm. it up, and they feed it to bees. With this scheme, they're going to grow giant bees, and then they're going to have lots of honey. And, of course, the bees then get so big they can't fly, and they're just rolling around. And a human ends up taking some of this, and he gets so big he's just in constant pain, and he's just rolling around. And he doesn't, fall apart or anything, but he ends up having to, crawl into the ocean to support his weight.
Much like a dinosaur knocking boots.
Yeah, and then I think he gets, I forget what happens to him. But if you want to read more about it, check out the work of Michael Shea. He's quite fabulous. And do tell us what you think about giant animals, giant monsters, and again, if you find any in fiction that actually make a little bit of scientific sense, let us know. You can always find us on Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, we're Stuff to Blow Your Mind, and on Twitter, our Twitter handle is Blow the Mind, one word.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and I'm a journalist. Join me on my new podcast, But We Loved, coming May 15th, where queer elders recount the amazing history they've lived through.
In the middle of Wall Street, they stopped traffic. They were doing a die-in.
There is a right! Help, there
and in
is
the
right.
process, share little gems of wisdom for the next generation.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
You can listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.